This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Knorr. Thanks so much for tuning in. Today is the anniversary of D-Day. By this time, 70 years ago, the massive military invasion known as Operation Overlord was well underway on the beaches of Normandy. The 24,000 troops from the United States, Great Britain, and Canada paved the way for the emancipation of occupied France and ultimately the end of the European conflict. This year is also the 50th anniversary of the death of another World War II icon with strong ties to Milwaukee. General Douglas MacArthur spent much of his early life here, graduating from West Division High School. Tomorrow morning, a rededication ceremony will mark the moving of the city's Douglas MacArthur statue to its new home near the War Memorial. Chaz Mulcahy is past chairman of the Milwaukee County War Memorial and is the organizer of this MacArthur Week, as well as the first one, which was held in 1979. Deanna Alexander is a Milwaukee County supervisor who will speak at the event, and David Black is a special guest. He's from Perth, Australia, and was a child when MacArthur came to that country to help defend it from Japan. Mulcahy starts off by telling us more about MacArthur's ties to Milwaukee.
After he left Korea on April 27th, 1951, General MacArthur was awarded an honorary Doctor of Laws degree from Marquette University Law School from Father Edward O'Donnell at the old Marquette football stadium before 20,000 people. There wasn't a seat open in the place. In 1964, General MacArthur passed away on April 5th. His widow, Jean MacArthur, carried on his legacy and returned to Milwaukee in 1979 for what was then the first MacArthur Memorial Week.
Yeah, and that was 35 years
that
ago,
35
and here
years
we
ago.
Are.
And I was co-chairman, and I'm still alive. Yeah, it's good. Nice to be here.
And to see that sweep of history in
right.
that way, too. Deanna, I know you're going to be giving a talk on Jean, and she's so important to this story, isn't she?
She was his base of support. I'll be giving a speech this Saturday at the War Memorial at 8 a.m., focusing on Jean MacArthur and why she was special, unique, and courageous. And a lot of it goes back to the fact that she was a true symbol of servant leadership. She really believed in uplifting others and enriching other people's lives, and she did that directly for her husband as a way to help him do his job for the public better. A lot of people don't know that Ronald Reagan actually awarded her the Medal of Freedom in 1988. And for those who don't know, that's the highest civilian award that a person can receive for patriotic service to their country. So Jean MacArthur is a very important part of the story, and I'm really hoping to help the people of Milwaukee learn a lot more about her and the legacy that she left.
Getting back to General MacArthur himself, what makes him such a compelling figure, do you think? David Black, I want to bring you into this conversation. What is it about him that still interests us all these years later?
Well, of course, I have a very special interest and a very special relationship to this question, because the part of General MacArthur's life that I am most concerned with is a relatively short period of life, but in my opinion, of great, great importance. Between March in 1942 and September in 1944, he lived in Australia. And it's not saying too much to suggest that as far as Australians are concerned, he was their savior. He was there to save them from the Japanese. And the strong feeling that developed during that period of time was handled very effectively because of his relationship with the Prime Minister of the day, John Curtin, which is why I've been particularly asked to come here. But I would also like to add that the period that MacArthur spent in Japan is also of great importance to us because we had been bitter enemies during the war. And yet by 1955, we entered into a commercial trade treaty with Japan, who became our leading trading partner for half a century. And we must say that surely the work that MacArthur did while he was in Japan was crucial in that process.
So he actually, in some ways, was responsible for that, for that détente.
Well, certainly he made it possible for a country like Australia, where the people bitterly hated the Japanese at the time because of the experiences of their prisoners of war and people of that kind, the MacArthur era meant that the American government was able to move decisively to an alliance with Japan, a treaty with Japan, and one which Australia accepted and which has turned out to be a great benefit to Australia ever since.
Chaz, one of the things about MacArthur, and I think this is what makes him so compelling, is that his path wasn't always smooth. And when he left Korea, it was not under good circumstances. So learning about this kind of thing, I think a lot of people might not know that Australia feels this strongly about MacArthur and what he was able to do for them. How do we reconcile those parts of him today?
You mentioned struggles. His whole life was a series of struggles. He grew up on the frontier. His father was a military officer, Arthur MacArthur, general, Congressional Medal of Honor winner in the Battle of Missionary Ridge in the Civil War at age 19. So Douglas grows up in these army posts in the West, and it was pretty lean living. He goes to West Point. He gets out. He's sent to the Philippines right away. He serves there. He comes back and he serves in the First World War and receives 7 battle decorations. And then after that, comes back to the States, becomes the superintendent at West Point. And here's the next struggle. An old guard there is setting the curriculum, and he says, we've got to modernize. And he fights, and he gets it. He totally modernizes West Point. Then he goes on to being chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest ranking person of that age, 44 in the history of the country. And again, it's the Depression. And President Roosevelt is drastically cutting the budget, and MacArthur is fighting to maintain the staff officers of the United States military in great adversity. And he had a brutal battle with Roosevelt in his office where he said, if there's an American soldier dying before they slip the bayonet into him, I want him to yell Roosevelt and curse him and not MacArthur. So he had this fiery disposition to stand up for what he thought was right. Then the Second World War comes, more adversity. He's in the Philippines. He's supposed to be resupplied. They don't resupply him. Eventually, our forces surrender there. He escapes by PT boat by order of President Roosevelt, but he's never resupplied. More adversity. They promise him the supreme commander position in Australia. He goes there, promised that they have all these forces waiting. He gets there, and there's nothing there. More adversity. So he keeps overcoming all these different things along the way. So the war goes on. Then it becomes a question of who's going to get the supplies in Australia. And President Roosevelt and Winston Churchill decided it was going to be Hitler first. We're going to defeat the Germans. More adversity. So he gets the crumbs. And thanks to an alliance with Australian Prime Minister John Curtin, the two of them together forge a relationship to turn the battle. It turns at Australia, but more adversity overcome. Then he's going up to the coast in the Philippines. He promised, I shall return. More adversity. The Allied commanders Nimitz and King meet with Roosevelt and say, we're going to go to Formosa, not the Philippines. And more. So he goes down to a meeting in Hawaii and convinces President Roosevelt, we've got to liberate the Philippines. So he overcomes that adversity. Then the war ends, and the question is, we've got people screaming to try the emperor. Hirohito is a war criminal, and he says, no, more adversity. And he overcomes that and works as David Black said, through the Japanese government to form a new constitution that saves Japan and modifies it from a militaristic feudal society into a true democracy today. It was one adversity after another. So when he gets to Korea, he's used to the battles. He was intemperate. He was insubordinate to the president, and he was removed. But he had a long, distinguished career up to that point.
Right. And it was very true to his character.
Yes.
That he continually fought for his principles and what he truly believed
right.
in and what was best for the troops under him.
Now, consider that in the middle of all of that, in I think it was 1941, during a time of great distress, his wife, Jean MacArthur, was ordered to evacuate with their 3-year-old son. And what did she say? But he and I have drank from the same cup, and I'm going to stay with him and support him. So, you know, he had adversity after adversity, but he also had someone on the home front, if you will, but on the home front with him by his side as he went around the world that was holding things together and, you know, just providing great support and courage as a base for him.
David Black, do you think that kind of frontier upbringing and that willingness to stand for your principles, which we think of as a very American thing, is that something that resonates in Australia too?
I think it resonates probably more clearly here than it does in Australia. But what did resonate in Australia was that they saw this man who clearly was a large man physically, a large man in terms of achievements, a person who believed strongly in what he was doing and had the capacity to do it. And the fact that he was able to work so highly efficiently and harmoniously with their own prime minister, our own prime minister, who was a very different personality altogether. And it was the capacity of someone like MacArthur, and we've heard the kind of strengths of character he had, a strong, almost dominating character at times. The analogy we sometimes use in Australia that he was almost a John Wayne-like figure, the big sort of Western hero, that nevertheless he was able to work with our Prime Minister, who was a quiet, gentle man, a very effective speaker, but a very ordinary man, in fact, quite small, had had quite a few difficulties in life and certainly had no significant military background, though his knowledge of military affairs was, I think, extraordinarily strong. The fact that these two men could work together is enormously important in Australian history, and it says something both about Curtin himself, but certainly about MacArthur. The fact that MacArthur was able to be dominant and forthright in the way he was, and yet at the same time so supportive of Curtin. And in Australia, if I can say, I went myself to see a memorial erected to Curtin, and they chose at the base of that memorial words from General MacArthur, in which he described Curtin as being virtually the heart and soul of Australia. So I think MacArthur showed in Australia this extraordinary capacity that, notwithstanding his other characteristics, he was able to work so harmoniously and ultimately so effectively with our Prime Minister.
So what does the legacy of Douglas MacArthur teach us today? What do you hope that this week is going to tell people who might not know any of this history?
We are very interested in the younger people in this community and throughout our country. They represent the future of America and the world. There are lessons to be learned from this. We look at the whole Far East. We had a program today on that. There are many, many threats surfacing now in the Far East with China and different disputes, territorial disputes with countries. It's a shame, but it looks like some of that history keeps repeating itself. So we want to learn from mistakes of the past. We want our young people to embrace an interest in history, become more familiar with it, come to love their history and realize that freedom is not free. It comes at a price, and that price was demonstrated by the things that General MacArthur did.
So what characteristics would you hope that young people would emulate that MacArthur had, that Gene MacArthur had?
I see Gene MacArthur as being strong, assertive, loyal, and supportive. And many times we don't learn about people in history until long after they're gone. We're talking about a local Milwaukee family here that has a local legacy. There are people in town this week that knew them personally. This isn't something from hundreds of years ago. This is recent history. You know, in Milwaukee, we have the General MacArthur statue. It's been near the courthouse, and we're moving that down. It's actually been moved now and having the unveiling this week, down to the War Memorial. And I think it's so important that when parents and children and families are down at our lakefront and they see the statue and a child says, "Mommy, who's that man?" The parent has a great opportunity now to give an answer other than, I don't know, some war guy. They can give a detailed answer and tell about General MacArthur's legacy, who he was, some of the things he did, what he stood for. And I think that this entire movement this week seeks to put not just a face to a person in history, but to breathe life back into the statue and the legacy left behind.
So just to pick up on that, the statue is now, there are five paths coming to a point at the Veterans Park, just right on the lakefront. He's a five-star general. There are four sides to the platform that was built. We're designing four plaques for the four sides, and we're going to pick up on what Diana said. And when those families come up and they ask the question, the parent can come over and point to the statue and look at the plaques and say, here's the story. It'll be just like the monuments in Washington, D.C.
And David, for young people in Australia, what do you hope that you're going to bring back or that they're looking at maybe via Skype or something like that while this is going on?
There are a number of different messages that one can bring back, but certainly I think it should make Australians, for a start, appreciate how fortunate they are in the world today. We are in a position where, because of the fact we're largely surrounded by sea, we have not been subject to actual land invasion. And the Japanese threat, of course, was the nearest we ever came to this. We have arguments in Australia still about people coming to Australia, arriving by boat and so on, but we do not have the hazards, the land frontiers and so on, which many other countries have. And I think Australians to learn to appreciate that they are very, very fortunate people indeed, living a prosperous life in a relatively protected environment, but that there was one point in our history not that long ago where without the help of allies we would have been in deep, deep trouble. And at the same time, our own leaders rose to the occasion enormously. And one of the, of course, obvious things that the war did is it developed a link between Australia and the United States of America, which is extremely strong ever since. In that period, the United States and Australia stood together against a really hostile world outside. And the people we were hostile against, we are now very close collaborators with, very much to do with the work of General MacArthur.
I want to thank all three of you for stopping in today and telling us just a little bit about General Douglas MacArthur and his Milwaukee and Australia connections. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Indeed. Appreciate it.
Chas Mulcahy is the organizer of Milwaukee's MacArthur Week. Deanna Alexander is a Milwaukee County supervisor who will speak at tomorrow's rededication of the MacArthur statue. And David Black is from Perth, Australia, and is the author of a book on MacArthur and then Australian Prime Minister John Curtin. He'll be a special guest at the ceremony. There's a link to more information at wuwm.com/lakeeffect.